Thank you, Kim. John Williams here. Happy Friday to you. Here we go.
Their duct tape solutions won't work anymore.
Oh, that made me laugh. It's 109. Lord, have mercy. All the way until 3 o'clock. Yep, it's a two-hour show. By my count, now 1 hour and 51 minutes away. But let's not look at it that way. I have an important announcement to read about the brackets here at WGN Radio in just a moment. Once Steve Bertrand gets into his news desk, Kim's vacated it. They're doing a changing of the guard upstairs. And the reason we dropped Governor Rauner in that spot in our open was because I want to talk a little bit about that, too. You know, I think his message is really good in that campaign ad, which they promise us is not a campaign ad. But he's wearing the red flannel shirt again. And I just, if they called me and said, hey, we got this billionaire. He wants to run for governor again, or the first time. What do you think he should be wearing in this sort of handyman, duct taping it up, patching things together kind of ad? He just doesn't look credible to me in a flannel shirt. He does not. He looks like a guy who is trying to look like guys who look like that, but he doesn't look like that, and he can't look like that. And then it just looks phony to me, and I hate to get hung up on the optics of it because I actually wrote down notes about the message in that little 30-second thing, and I thought, I like this, I like this, I like this, I like this. I don't like the shirt. The shirt looks phony, and therefore the message seems diminished because of it. This is what I do when I watch TV commercials sometimes. After the news at 1:30, we'll talk to a Chicago man who saved $1 million by the time he was 30. I saw that headline and thought, oh, what's this? And I don't know if I love people like this or if I absolutely hate and resent them. And the start of the story is really well written from the ChicagoTribune.com last week. A few years after graduating from college, Grant Sabatier, or is it Sabatier, was unemployed, broke, and living with his parents. This was a few years after graduating from college. Hungry for a burrito one afternoon, the 20-something checked his account balance and learned that he had $2.26 in the bank. The low point served as a wake-up call for him. He took an image of his balance and then set a goal of saving so much money that he could retire early if he wanted to. Quote, I remember having this intense feeling of honestly just a lack of control, he said. He's 32 now. And he writes about his financial habits and mistakes on his blog, Millennial Money. I never wanted to feel that way again, he said. Amen to that. But then there's a couple of other interesting things in the article and in his story, and we'll talk with him and you about that at 1:30 here on WGN. Incidentally, I've been sharing with you this week my ongoing hunt for a place to live. I'm a recent transplant back into the Chicago area. I lived in Joliet for years and years, in LaGrange Park for 15, and I am back in the market coming down from Minneapolis, and so we're looking in everywhere from Northwest Indiana to Evanston. I mean, it's a wide swath, and so I'm just constantly looking at things. I'm currently staying in a little efficiency downtown, a condo in the sky. It's a beautiful view, and it's lovely. It's too small. It's too expensive, but I'm just there for a little while until we find a place. And then I come into the studio, and there's this brochure from Rennell, R-E-N-E-L-L-E, on the river. Seeing is believing. And I'm like, oh, this looks nice. I could live here. I said, Bertrand, did you interview these people? He said, no. I said, this looks like a good business. And here's the residence. It's 3 bedrooms, 3.5 baths. It's got a little terrace, 2,400 square feet. You can see the river. You can see the skyline. I'm like, well, this would be a good place to live. And look at this. It says starting at starting at $1.3 million up to $3.2. So you're looking at two and a half if you want some closet space. I don't have 2.5 for 2,400 square feet. It's 1:12. John, you're on WGN. This is John Williams. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, it's funny you said the thing about Rauner with the shirt because I thought the same thing when he was running for governor to begin with. He was wearing like an old beat up Orvis shirt, which was probably like, you know, $150 flannel shirt. but that being said, you know, it seems like there's a concerted effort to kind of blame Rauner for the log jam. And, you know, all my buddies that I disagree with on this, you know, All you have to do is look at the last 30 years. The state is five levels below junk bond status. We're completely bankrupt. We can't pay any of the pensions. So the fact that a guy like Madigan gets in year after year after year, I mean, that guy should be wearing like a shark skin suit or polyester, because he's worse than a used car salesman, in my opinion. And it's just like, at this point, I don't care if Rauner does his commercials naked. If something can be done, that's fine with me.
Yeah, really. If he wears the Jay Cutler outfit, I would still be okay with it if he could fix the budget.
Yeah, I mean, if anything could be fixed, but it's like the whole state, it's just at the point now where, I mean, I'm native Chicagoan, born and raised here, and I'm literally at the point where I'm just like looking at other states to get out of Dodge, because this state is such a runaway train wreck. And, you try to have hope that it's going to get fixed, but I got to tell you, it's, you know, if Rauner is doing nothing other than shutting down Madigan for his term, that's okay by me.
I appreciate your phone call. Thanks, John. Hang in there, man.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah. I mean, I moved here. Don't leave. I need more of you around me. I need, more taxpayers. I see Steve Bertrand is in the newsroom seat. Can I read a press release, Steve Bertrand, about you?
About me?
This is from one newsman, Ryan Burrell.
Oh, no.
It says, this appears to be now a two-pony race with Steve Bertrand banking on North Carolina to take it all, while Andrea Darlis could hit it big with Oregon or Gonzaga winning it.
Not going to happen.
If South Carolina wins it, Andrea wins if they play Oregon. This is one of those things where there's all these possibilities. But Bertrand wins if they play North Carolina.
Win if Gonzaga plays North Carolina.
I'll read it again. A two-pony race with Bertrand, this is the station pool, banking on North Carolina to take it all. Andrea Darlis could hit it big with Oregon or Gonzaga winning it.
I can't believe Gonzaga got out of the first round.
I had South Dakota State beating them in the first ever 16-1 upset.
Mm-hmm.
If South Carolina wins it, Andrea wins if they play Oregon. Okay, whatever that means. And then Bertrand, if they play NC. It says here later in the press release, Mary Vandeveld will finish last in the standings, but first in our heart. They have issued a summary clarification of that and say it's possible that Mary will not finish in last place.
She threw a traffic jam up here, let me just say.
We still have, it says here, this is the funniest part, we still have one holdout for paying the money into the pool. I won't say who he is because I don't want it to interfere with the nightly talk show he hosts on WGN. So one of our staff members who's in the pool has not ponied up for everybody to then take out. That's somebody who owes you money, Steve, quite potentially.
That's the thing. And the way Burrow works is I'm going to win it all and he's going to turn to me to collect it. That ain't right.
Don, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hi, John.
Hi.
In the continuing drama of getting you a place to park your body and make you feel comfortable, this month's issue of Chicago Magazine, lead article, all about real estate.
Really?
And it really speaks to some of the things that you've been talking about. So I would highly recommend that after 3 o'clock you go find wherever they live in the tower and steal one of their magazines.
Yeah, really. I'll go to that $2 million palace in the sky. I'll bet they got them laying around like litter. I'll just grab one of them up there. Huh? Does it have a recommendation, Don? Does it say, hey, John, you should live here?
Well, I suspect if they had known about your journey, they probably would have been a guest on your show, and you could have gone from there.
Well, there's always tomorrow or Monday. I'm on Saturdays, and I'm on Monday. Maybe I'll grab them, and we'll chit-chat a little bit about that. Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, no, actually, I think that would probably be I've already seen him interviewed once, and I think it would be quite well done, because he also spent like 6 or 12 months in France and wrote a book about it. And
really?
He's really quite interesting.
Who's the author of the article?
Yeah. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, yeah. No, we'll dig it up. It's a good advice. Thanks, Don. I appreciate the heads up.
Take care. Bye.
Yeah, stay well. So here is, I want to go back to that Rauner ad where he's wearing the flannel shirt. Steve, I wasn't here when he ran the first time, but I know that a lot was said about the billionaire trying to look folksy.
The Carhartt jacket.
All of that stuff, you know, which I think still had the tag on it. But, you know, I get it. But I would think that the second time around, he'd sort of, I don't know, does he have to do that? Put on this lumberjack kind of flannel thing? Hey, I'm a regular guy. I'm just sitting here trying to patch up Illinois. We get the metaphor, but the shirt looks so hokey to me. that I can't hear the message. I can't hear the message. I'm almost doing what Bill O'Reilly did to Maxine Waters. I can't stop looking at the one thing, and I'm not focusing enough on the message. And you do not want to do that. Here's the message, by the way, if you just want to get down to the nuts and bolts of it.
Illinois is broke and broken. Our balanced budget plan freezes property taxes, caps spending, creates jobs, and puts term limits on politicians. Their duct tape solutions won't work anymore.
So he had like four things in there. Freeze property taxes. Who wouldn't be for that? Cap spending. I think we're all for that. And by the way, cap spending sometimes means continue to give everybody a raise, but don't add additional revenue streams or cost streams, you know. So you would still, when they cap spending, it cost still goes up like 2 or 3% a year. If that's the best we can do, I'll take that. He's for creating jobs. And then he's also got term limits. Gosh, I wonder who that could be for. So, like, who doesn't want those four things? I'm looking at the flannel shirt. Just one other note about that. It said in the paper today that that is technically not a campaign commercial. That is not a campaign commercial. That is just a message about the state of Illinois and does not qualify as that. Here's the way the Sun-Times wrote about it. It said, according to the FCC, the ads are labeled non-candidate advertising and concern, quote, Illinois governmental and fiscal reform. So they're not technically political campaign ads that must be reported to the state's election board, whatever. But they're spending over $1 million on these TV commercials throughout the state right now to sort of get that message across. And it's a message that resonates from a guy wearing a really ridiculous red and blue flannel shirt.
Well, I have to say, you know, he also drops his G's when he talks, and it's sort of not in a uniform way.
Yeah, right.
And so that struck me as a put on. I don't know if it is anymore because it is the way he talks. I mean, he's been talking that way.
I remember Roe kind of seized on that when he first came to this station. It was the same time that he was running, and Roe made a lot of hay about that.
Well, it just jumps out. I mean, it just jumps out. But
well, not as much as the red and blue flannel shirt. And if he was just sitting behind a gubernatorial desk, I would be okay with that. By the way, Lou Manfredini just texted me.
Mm-hmm. Day four, being held hostage.
It says, Rainer stealing my brand. Then he wanted to correct that because it auto-corrected it.
Uh-huh.
So then he texted again, but it auto-corrected the correction. So I got another one that just says Rainer. So I have Rainer stealing my brand, and then I have another text, Rainer, and now he's ticked. So he texts me a third time to correct the correction of the original text. And this time he just wrote Rahmer. I know, Lou. I know. Sorry about that. I can't help that. I can't fix that. It's 121, the man who made $1 million. He said he was going to do it before he was 30. He did. General Flynn is going to testify if he can get immunity. So what's that all about? Everybody was tweeting last night, and it blew up on Twitter. Holy cow, it looks like if he can get immunity, Flynn's got the goods. He'll testify before at least the Senate. I don't think he's going to say anything that those people want. If you're one of the people that on Twitter last night said, here we go. Here it comes. He's going to flip if he gets immunity. I don't think you're going to get that.
I want immunity. I would ask.
You know, you were saying this in the hall to me.
Absolutely.
And this is the second time this week you have utterly disappointed me.
In what way?
Well, earlier this week, you demonstrated extraordinary situational ethics when you said that virtual staging of properties on the real estate market is okay.
It was a rhetorical question. I don't really want to know what
was. And then the other thing is this. I think if you want to tell the truth and you believe in the truth, then you shouldn't demand immunity. Tell your story.
If I'm going to be called before prosecutors and not ordered to voluntarily, you know, and they want me to come and I don't know what they're going to ask or what might. Look, most of these people at this level who get convicted is for something secondary.
I want
right?
it to be more principled, Steve. That sounds cowardly.
Principled? Look, I'll testify if you make me, but if you just want me to, you got to give me something in return.
If you have something that you think the country would benefit from, say the truth about an election hack or the truth about the IRS looking into somebody that shouldn't be, if you've got truth that you want to tell or should tell that we'll all benefit from, you should do so because that's the right thing to do, not
I'll
because
do
you can
it.
Get a good deal.
I'll do it so that you benefit from it and I don't say something stupid that lends me to criminal charges.
Okay. Well, but then that's a different story, right? Then what you've got is something that can incriminate you, and you're equally guilty of some crime. I'm saying if you have a truth to share and you're innocent, then go ahead and tell it. But you weren't even into that, were you?
Well, they're not asking him there because they think he, you know, has only positive things to say.
And, okay.
Right? I mean, really, I mean, in all seriousness, if I'm going to be called before a committee that I could face charges for what I say, I don't know what they're going to ask me. I think it's a very reasonable thing to ask for immunity.
This sounds like, and I've had attorneys say this to me, and it annoyed me then, too. And I love you, Steve Bertrand. I came here because I wanted to work with you. But attorneys will tell you that if you're in a car accident, you didn't do anything wrong, or maybe you did. It doesn't matter. When you get out of the car, don't say, oh, I'm sorry, even though you're sorry. You're sorry that you hit this person or we all had this car crash. Don't say you're sorry. I think that's a natural, honest, spontaneous thing to say. You should say you're sorry. But they say, oh, don't say you're sorry. That's an admission of guilt. I hate it when we do that to each other.
I don't think this is the same thing. I know what you're saying, and I would never say I was sorry after a crash. No, I think just because you ask for immunity, it's like when you're buying a house. Why don't you ask for a car, too? It's like, well, it doesn't hurt to ask. Maybe I'll get a car out of it.
Fair enough. You know? Fair enough. But if they don't grant you the immunity, I still want you to testify.
Well, I think he could be compelled to, sure.
It's 125, and then he'll take the fifth. This is WGN. About an hour from now, our numbers in the news. Current events quiz is really fun. Here's a number in the news this week. 1 in 4 married couples sleep in separate bedrooms. Percentage of married couples that sleep in separate rooms is 25%. I'm shocked, disappointed, and saddened to hear this news. Let's take a couple quick phone calls here. Kathy, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hi there. Okay, I'd asked before and I didn't hear about it. Al Capone went, like, in the 1920s, he went to jail, not because he any of his activities as a gangster, but because of tax. He lied on his tax forms. I was wondering, we all want to see, or most of us want to see, Donald Trump's tax returns. Would the IRS have any responsibility to the public when he says, I don't have properties here, I'm not banking there? Would they have a responsibility to say, you're lying about your taxes?
Yeah, I think that, well, the IRS does investigate people, that's for sure. They may be investigating him, which is different than an audit, but we have no evidence of that. Nobody is saying, the IRS certainly, that he's been cheating.
But the IRS isn't going to, if I'm lying about what's in my taxes,
yeah,
the IRS isn't going to say he's lying about that. I mean, he can... You know what I'm saying?
No, I do not.
Well, I think the question was, if Donald Trump is saying I don't have any businesses here and his tax forms say that they do, can the IRS say, hey, you're lying about that because in your taxes it says that you do?
It seems to me like that's not their business.
Exactly.
Right?
So they're not going to do that. I can lie to you about my tax returns all I want.
Right.
And the IRS isn't going to say anything. No. When I lie to them.
No, but the IRS will prosecute you, though, for
income tax violation.
Yeah.
I lie to them, not if I'm lying to you.
I see your point. This is Ken. You're on WGN. Hi, Ken.
Hi.
What do you want?
I live in upstate Illinois, and I heard Governor Rauner's ad on the TV. And I agree with you. It's really hokey looking and sounding. And in my opinion, he and all of the legislators ought to be put in jail because they're not fulfilling their duties.
I appreciate the phone call, Ken. I'm going to go from you to Kim. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you joining us. We're short of time. I want to get in a few more voices, but I'm with you, my friend. Kim's in Bourbonnais. Go ahead, Kim.
Hi. Longtime listener, thrilled that you're back, John.
Thank you.
I think you should check out Bourbonnais. I live there. There's tons of commuters into the city.
Really?
Low taxes.
What's the commute time from Bourbonnais?
Pardon?
What would the commute time be from Bourbonnais, door to door?
6 weeks.
Well, you can actually get a train 20 minutes north in a town called University Park and take the train in. My son did that when he was working downtown.
Yeah.
That would be one option to commuting all the way in. I'm guessing probably hour 20. I've never fully commuted in.
Well, Kim, that's telling.
Well, see, Kim, I'm from Manteno.
I know you are.
He should just move to Manteno. He's closer to that University Park train.
I'm not going to go to either of those fine towns. Thank you, Kim. Mike is on line number, 4. Mike, jump in here, and then we'll break for news. What do you want to say?
Hi, guys. I know you're under the belt as far as time goes. According to Flynn, he stated that he stated anybody that had wanted immunity would be probably guilty of something.
Yeah.
So by his own standards, if that's his mindset, then he's already admitting that he's guilty of something.
It's pretty amazing soundbite. I'll play that after two when we dig deeper into this. If all the things he could have said, that's the one thing he wants back.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Well, I'd buy you a K-car.
A nice Reliant.
I love this song.
And if I had $1 million, I'd buy you.
141 WGN. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Ave.
If I had $1 million,
I'd build a tree fort in our yard.
And aside from the fact that I like that song, the guy who's sitting next to us now has $1 million, and that's why he is in our studio. His name is Grant Sabatier. He is a 30-year-old, now 32-year-old, right?
32-year-old,
32.
Yep.
I want to read you the first paragraph of a story about you in the Chicago Tribune the other day. It said, a few years after graduating from college, Grant Sabatier was unemployed, broke, and living with his parents, hungry for a burrito one afternoon. The 20-something checked his account balance and learned he had $2.26 in the bank. The low point served as a wake-up call. You said, I never wanted to feel that way again. That sounds apocryphal. Is that true?
Yeah, it's totally true. It's actually that day I took a screenshot of my bank account, and it's still hanging in my closet to this day.
Really?
You can see, yeah, it was kind of the motivation.
But you know, that's funny because I got a son who's in his 20s. He's got about $2 in his account.
Yeah.
And it's not scaring the hell out of him. I mean, it's, and a lot of people do. Why was that so epiphanous to you?
Yeah, I think so. I had had a few jobs before this moment happened. So I'd been laid off from a job. I'd saved a little money. I spent it all. And I quickly realized, hey, you know, I'm 24 years old. How am I ever going to get ahead? Right. And I'm a smart guy. And I thought, you know, if I can really just put all this energy that I'm putting into being 24, going out, going to shows, if I can focus it on my future and really try to hack money, you know, my life is going to be a lot better for it. So
do you have a college degree?
I do. So actually, I went to the University of Chicago.
Oh, well, that explains everything.
No, but I was a philosophy major, right?
So oh, that really explains nothing.
Anything.
Are you serious?
About money. I was, yeah.
They should be prosecuted for fraud. Colleges that hand out philosophy degrees should not hand out philosophy degrees.
No, I don't know, man. It taught me, really taught me how to think. You
Pardon
know?
Me, that was unkind to you, course, wasn't it? And course. You're winning, so shut my mouth. But it just seems to me like if you're going to a place that costs $60,000 a year and you have a degree in philosophy, how do you translate that, right?
Yeah, so I was actually fortunate. I played soccer at the University of Chicago, and they can't give athletic scholarships, but I got a bunch of academic money. So it actually didn't end up costing me. I graduated with a little bit of student debt. So I was kind of, I wouldn't have gone to the UFC if I had to pay for it myself.
So you have your degree in philosophy from the UFC. You've got $2.26 in your account. You think, this sucks. I got to change my ways.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people really misunderstand money. They view it as kind of a singular concept. But when you view it as more holistic. And so I really approached money like I did philosophy. And I looked at sort of, what are my attitudes about money? What's my mindset? How do I think about it? And then I devised a really pretty systematic process in order to make more money, save more money, and ultimately at the end of the day, you know, give me more opportunities.
How long did it take you to get from $2 to $1 million?
5 years and 2 months.
And what was the highest paying job you had in that time?
Yeah, so actually during that time, the highest paying job I had was around $50,000, but a vast majority of the income that I earned was through my side hustles, right? So I'm in digital marketing, and I started digital marketing at a time where not a lot of people were doing it.
You were building websites.
I was building
people.
Websites. I was launching Google Ads.
What do you get campaigns. Paid? What do you get paid for building a website?
So the first website was actually for a law firm not too far from here that I did, and I got $500. And then within 3 months, I went from making $500 per website to $50,000. So I got introduced through this network of attorneys and got bigger and bigger law firm clients. And really, I used the same template for each of them.
But it also sounded like you were doing things that were rather rudimentary, too. Weren't you parking cars or just doing some basic stuff, too?
Yeah. So I approached, at that time when I had $2.26, I was like, what are the things that I can do to make money? And I started looking at every life opportunity as a way to make money. So when I still wanted to go to concerts, but instead of just buying one ticket, I'd buy six tickets and try to flip them.
So at some points, you had three jobs working at one time.
Oh, no. I was probably doing seven or eight different things at one time. trying to, I was flipping Volkswagen camper vans. I was selling mopeds. I was, you know, building websites. I was selling concert tickets. I was selling and flipping things on eBay. I was just doing a bunch of things.
With the singular goal of getting to $1 million?
No, with really the goal of just trying to invest as much money as possible. So when I stopped taking a spending and saving mindset and really took on an investing mindset, I knew that being young was my biggest asset. And I knew that the market had recently been at the bottom, the stock market, and that there was a high likelihood that the market would recover. And so I tried to get as much money into the market as possible, as quickly as possible.
So you were in equities then?
Totally, yeah.
Mutual funds, or were you buying individual stocks?
No, a vast majority of it was in index funds, right? So the money that I put in basically at this beginning, every dollar I put in back then has tripled in value just in a pure Vanguard market index fund.
Sure.
I also aggressively bought Amazon stock because I was like, Amazon, everything's going to change. So I put probably 80% in index funds and then about 20% directly in Amazon.
And the market went from about 7 to about 21.
Correct. Yep. So I was able to really
I
use that.
I should have thought of that.
I was able to use it to my advantage, honestly. And I think a lot of people, I always say that, you know, you should freelance or side hustle to get money to invest as opposed to spend.
But I think that the sort of, one of the takeaways from your story to me was that if you just singularly focus on it, if you say, this is what I'm going to do today, and that includes not just only earning the money, but saving the money. You know, I think about that. Like a house costs $300,000. Plenty of people make $100,000 a year, but it will take them 30 years to pay off that house. And that has been a head scratcher for me, because you think in 3 years they pay you the cost of the house. Now, I know you got to eat and you don't get all that. You got to pay taxes. But if you think about that, you're getting a lot of the cost of the home every year. If you could find a way just to save a bunch of that, you may have to live in your parents' basement. You could own that home in a lot less than 30 years.
Yeah, totally. But sometimes, so I actually live here in downtown Chicago. I still have a mortgage, even though I could pay it off super easily. I have a 2.625% mortgage, and I basically have generated so far about an 8.2% return so far.
You're better
year.
Off with the
yeah,
mortgage.
Better off, actually.
But did you ever live in your parents' basement, or was somebody fronting costs for you so you could save money?
So I only lived in my parents' house when I didn't have an income. So once I actually got a job, I moved out on my own. I wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. So during kind of my job hunt and my teaching myself digital marketing and doing a little freelancing, I lived at home. But I didn't like live at home and save up a bunch of money and then go out into the world.
Grant Sabatier is in our studio. He's 32 now, but it was in his 20s when he thought, I got $2 in my account and I don't like this. You heard him say he's a graduate of the University of Chicago in philosophy and took a philosophical approach to this. Now what are you worth?
Oh, gosh. So they just did a story a couple weeks ago. I have 1.345 million in my Vanguard liquid account. I own two properties in Chicago, and I have a number of other investments and companies that are worth far beyond that. So my actual net worth is more in kind of the 2.53 range. And that $1 million goal was actually liquid cash, right? So it was just having actual investable liquid, not my other assets.
There was one thing in the story we haven't touched on yet that I thought was a red flag about you. I wonder if you see it the same way in a minute. At almost 1:53, we just have 4 or 5 more minutes with our guest. There was a story about him in the Tribune the other day. You may have seen his story on, I think it was MSNBC. Did they do a story on you?
CNBC.
CNBC
Washington
did?
Post.
And is somebody else running a story on you tomorrow or this weekend?
Yeah, so I'll be in the Sunday business section of the Washington Post.
I've heard of them. So his story is that at the age of 20-something, he thought, I have too little money. This is ridiculous. Set about a goal of making a lot of money, $1 million in cash. You have that in liquid assets. And now at 32, you own a couple of companies, you have multiple properties, and by golly, he did it. In the story about you in the Tribune, it mentioned how you got to that point, and then you realized that your spending was also sometimes rather extraordinary. You'd spend 5 figures on a vacation for a week. Now, maybe that's not unusual, but the number jumped out at me, and you were spending the way you didn't want to be on your way up to getting where you got.
Exactly.
And I thought, this sounds like chronic abusers sometimes, people who binge and purge or who have control issues. And I thought, I wonder if that's part of your life. And I wonder if that frightens you, having too much money.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So lifestyle inflation is certainly something everyone has to,
that's a good way to put it,
has to be aware of. I have more than enough money to spend $210,000 a year and be fine, honestly, but I
didn't. That's the number, right? You realize you were spending $210,000 last year. You were spending that, and to, as you may know, to spend $200,000, you have to have made $350,000.
Yeah, I made quite a bit more than that actually last year. But I just didn't really like the person that I was becoming, right? So what, having that much money, I stopped thinking about money, right? I started just buying whatever I wanted. And honestly, I think it's both sort of culturally and also personally a little irresponsible. And I thought, you know, there's better things that I can do with this money than just, you know, buy everything that I want.
Well, you get to do whatever you want. It's your money. But not knowing you other than a newspaper story, I thought this sounds like two different people. The guy in the first half of the story and then the guy spending all the money.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think I was so frugal over that 5-year period that I binged a little bit, honestly, once I had the money. Now I've set, you know, the part of that post that I wrote, I've done a reset, right? So I actually was able to save 82% of my income in January. So I constantly, you're right, I love hacking money and I love testing myself. It's all about optimization. And so that was actually, I'm happy I had that experience. At least I caught it. There's a lot of doctors that get out of residency, they get a big paying job, and lifestyle inflation just completely takes them over.
Yeah.
And I've kind of got that in check now.
Expenses rise to meet income, don't they? Or exceed income even when the income is high. So his blog is at millennialmoney.com. Millennialmoney.com. Give me a tip for people 20 or 70 years old, maybe more on the younger side. What advice do you have for folks?
Yeah, focus on daily money goals instead of longer term goals. So we actually, as humans, we're really not wired to think about money in the future. So when you get a huge number, like I need to save $2 million for retirement, it literally just doesn't compute in your mind. And also when you're saving money, a lot of people save in 2-week or 1-month increments. And then what happens is if you miss one of those 2-week periods, you naturally wait another 2 weeks. And so I always encourage everyone to have daily savings goals. I started saving $5 a day and then escalated that to $50 a day and then more. I still do it today, right? So if I miss one day, I can pick up the next day.
How do you save $50 a day? Do you prorate? Do you divide your salary or your income by the days of the week?
Nope. All my money goes into my checking account, and then I just have my Vanguard app. And when I'm waking up, reading the Wall Street Journal, having my coffee, I deposit money into my Vanguard
fund. You find some way to put $50 every day into that account.
Right. It's actually considerably more now. But I determined that in order to retire at the age of 30 or be financially independent, I needed to save at least $50 a day from the time that I started.
Do people just want to slap you sometimes? You make it seem so easy. You make it seem so, well, if you just do this, then this will happen. And it's too simple.
Well, honestly, money is pretty simple. And I think a lot of the popular narrative out there is wrong. Things like you need to save 20% for a down payment is completely destructive. I only had 5% when I invested in my neighborhood and ended up making over $300,000 on my property that I wouldn't have been able to make if I had waited. Money's actually pretty simple. I think a lot of millennials are hacking it. I know more of my friends are between 30 and 35 and are retired than I know of all my parents, right? You're my dad's age and he's still working.
Yeah, sure. Sure. And not wanting to be. I think a lot of people my age in their mid to late 50s are working harder than they ever have and scratching their heads going, I was supposed to be on the downslope. It was supposed to be a lot easier than it is for a lot of us right now. Grant Sabatier is a Chicagoan, millennialmoney.com. You'll see his story in the Washington Post this weekend, too. He's got some book projects maybe in the works, so we haven't heard the last of you. Come visit with us again, okay?
Hey, thanks. This is a lot of fun, John. Appreciate it.
Nice to meet you.
When you are given immunity, that means that you've probably committed a crime.
That's a funny thing to say. I mean, boy, if you say that, you better make sure that you've never been asked for or are going to ask for immunity. We'll talk about the Michael Flynn story here in just a second. I want to read to you the letter from his attorney because we do Trump Talk at 2 on the John Williams Show. We know that that whole political world in Washington swirls every day and you're interested in it and we cover it. But rather than let my whole little 2-hour show be absorbed by it, we reserve it until 2 and we'll focus on a different topic each day here. And it's not always just about the president, but maybe sometimes things related to that. So today we talk a little bit about Michael Flynn's story. Steve, though, before we get into this, a friend of mine from Minnesota is here. His name is Steve Ink, and I worked with him at that radio station in Minneapolis, WCCO. Hi, Steve Ink.
John, good afternoon.
He's here with his beautiful family, and they want to take the Red Line up to Wrigleyville and kind of hang out there a little bit.
Okay.
How does he do that again?
How does he do that?
Yeah, like what does he need to know? Any tips for him?
Well, you go down Grand and get on the Red Line and then go north.
Yeah, see, that sounds very easy to you because you've done that 1,000 times.
No,
but they don't know what a Grand is.
Well, you can show them where Grand is, but I don't know how you... This is a good question because everything's a Ventra card now. I've still got some tokens from the 1980s I can give him.
Oh, so he's got to buy the card and
then
use the
card. I don't
know
the answer to that. Oh. I don't know how you do that.
Mm. What's going to run him? About $3 a person one
probably,
way?
Probably, yeah. And no one knows what anything costs anymore. They put it on
a
card.
Venture card, I know. I hope that was helpful to you, Steve.
That told me a lot.
Anything else, Steve, I could help you with?
I know where Grand Avenue is in South Minneapolis. I don't think that's going to get me to the Red Line.
If you get there, you've gone too far.
Oh, very good.
Elif will be able to help you in the production bay there if you need any more assistance than Steve.
Fantastic. So no one is excited about the Minnesota Twins home opener.
Hasn't really come up a lot.
I've noticed that, although there is a baseball team that's getting a lot of publicity here in town. That's what I've noticed.
Well, this is my world, Steve. You know, I've been working at WCCO and WGN back and forth for the last several years.
We know when you give the wrong phone number.
I do that sometimes. So... Phones are ringing in a studio in Minnesota. They're going, what? A Malnati's Pizza? I don't know what this is. So last year, the Cubs won 103 games during the regular season. The Twins lost 103 games. So my season last year was a push because my two teams were 50-50 at any given time.
They were mirror
twins. Images. Yeah.
And, you know, I want to point out, though, that the broadcaster, the radio voice for the Twins, is an old WGN hand, Corey Provis.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh. Corey Provis was our guy here for a long time.
Wow. And we hear him on the Big Ten Network all across
He does
upper
that,
Midwest
too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's a good man. It's nice to see him doing well up there. Okay. Inkster, I hope that helps you in some way.
It was fantastic, John. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
They got good people in Minnesota, and a producer named Steve Ink is one of the very best of them. It's true. So here's the story, Steve. I just want to read to you. You know what I'm talking about here, this letter that Michael Flynn's attorney put out, right? What is your guess? Does Flynn have the goods or does he not on the Donald Trump story? Does he have something that everybody's going to say, aha, he's going to turn on Donald Trump and he's actually going to reveal something? Or is he just going to try and... you know, save his own reputation?
Well, I mean, he might have said things to himself that would get himself in trouble, and maybe that's why he wants immunity. Do I think he has something that could bring down the presidency? I would say no.
And yet the first sentence, this is the letter from his attorney, dated March 30th, 2017, statement to Robert Kellner, counsel, statement by Robert Kellner, counsel to Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, retired. The first sentence is this: General Flynn certainly has a story to tell, and he very much wants to tell it should the circumstances permit. That's a really compelling opening sentence.
Right.
That's a guy who's writing a novel. That's a guy who's got some dish.
But why is he writing it in a compelling way like that?
Because when this thing first hit, you went, because holy cow, he's going to tell us what the Russians said and who they said it to. Or at least he's going to tell us what he said to the Russians and what the Russians said to him. That's awesome. That's damaging to President Trump and the administration. That's what that looks like. He certainly has a story to tell, and he very much wants to tell it. I mean, if he's really got a story to tell and he's dying to tell it, you'd think there's really something there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but again, the lawyer's writing this letter to entice members of Congress to grant his client immunity.
They also wrote, he devoted, and then the middle paragraph is about his service to this country. So you can see what they're doing. Let's give this guy a break because, they write, he's a highly decorated 33-year veteran of the U.S. Army. He devoted most of his life to serving his country, spending many years away from his family fighting this nation's battles around the world. He was awarded 4 Bronze Stars for actions in Iraq. I hope my voice doesn't sound like I'm mocking any of this. I think his service to this country is exemplary. I mean, he is the goods, right? He is the recipient of the Defense Department's Distinguished Service Award, the Intelligence Community's Gold Seal Medallion for Distinguished Service, as well as numerous other decorations. So his guys want you to know this is what he's done for you. Last paragraph. Notwithstanding his life of national service, the media are awash with unfounded allegations, outrageous claims of treason, and vicious innuendo directed against him. He is now the target of unsubstantiated public demands by members of Congress and other political critics that he be criminally investigated. No reasonable person who has the benefit of advice from counsel would submit to questioning in such a highly publicized witch hunt environment without assurances against unfair prosecution. So what does all that mean, Mr. News?
It just means that he's being, that his attorney says he's being maligned. He's got a story to tell, and if you only guarantee that he can't be prosecuted for it, he'll spill the beans.
Yeah. He wants not to be prosecuted for it because, well, Elif, do you have the soundbite about what he said about people that will only testify if granted protection? The immunity soundbite. I'll play for you what he said about that once upon a time. Let me know when you're ready with that, Elif. But the last paragraph to me is so different in tone from the first paragraph. He's got a story to tell, and he very much wants to tell it, should the circumstances permit. I mean, if the story to tell is just, well, nothing wrong happened here, that's not a story. That's not something that is... I would be disappointed if that's all it was.
To return to a conversation earlier this week, that's the equivalent of putting a house for sale ad online and making the insides look all pretty, right? We just want you to come to this house and look at it, and then you'll see maybe something that's a little dingier.
He's going to walk in, and you're going to go, oh, well, we granted you immunity for this?
Exactly.
I mean, are you kidding me? You know, it would be, I suspect Congress would be a lot more interested in granting him immunity if they knew that he wasn't the biggest fish they had to fry. If he... This sounds like I'm only interested in serving up Donald Trump. I'm not, but the way the game usually works is we'll pass on you if we can go higher up the food chain. So if that communication he had with, for instance, the Russian ambassador came at the behest of the president, if he could say something like that, well, then you'd give him immunity so that you could get the other thing.
Sure. Or if you, right, or yeah, if you just, if they, I've got the goods on how the Russians influenced, doesn't even have to be something... A criminal charge here.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering what your thought about this is, too. My number is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What's your guess on what he's got? And do you think that, what is your reaction to his pitch for immunity? Steve and I were talking about this earlier, and Steve said there's no way in the world a reasonable person, that's what they said in this paragraph, would testify without immunity. It's not sure that he's going to get it, by the way. And to me, that's a little disappointing.
Just a little clarification, though. I'm not saying I wouldn't testify without the immunity. I wouldn't testify without first asking for the immunity, right? Why wouldn't you?
Okay.
Why wouldn't you ask for the, you know,
right,
the CB radio in the car you're buying, too? If you're not going to give it to me, fine, but I
asked. Give me the undercoating as well.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't want a CB. Did you just say a CB radio? You want a CB radio in your car?
I think it'd be kind of cool.
1974? You want a CB radio? You know they've got CDs now, Steve.
You know how hard it is to find a CB radio?
Really? That would be quite the score for you if you could find it.
That's what I was thinking.
All right, all our lines are ringing. We'll pick some up next on WGN. When Mike Flynn was previously talking about, I'm not exactly sure what the context of this was. I know he was talking about Hillary Clinton.
It was about a couple of Clinton's aides, I think, were granted immunity in the FBI investigation into the emails.
Here is the soundbite when he talked about that.
When you are given immunity, that means that you've probably committed a crime. So, you know, I don't know how he can sit there and say something like that with all of the things that have been going around, just swirling around Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, so that's his, that's what we do. We absolutely assume and conclude the worst. I've been cautioning my family and friends that we shouldn't all jump to every conclusion that seems utterly reachable, but there he was doing it, and now that it's come home to roost, he wants immunity. Let's pick up some phone lines. We'll start with Joe. You're on WGN. Hey, Joe.
Hey, John. Just want to say, first of all, I'm glad to see you and Steve back together again.
I am,
you
too.
Sound great.
Thank you, sir.
You guys are really crazy. Anyway, my opinion on Flynn is when there's an ambulance going by me.
Be careful. Pull over.
When Obama put the sanctions on Russia before or during the elections, I think he sent Flynn down there to talk to them and let them know that he would remove those sanctions as soon as he was elected president.
Yeah.
And that's honestly what I believe he did. And now Flynn is the fall guy, and he's tired of being the fall guy. I believe he's going to come out and say exactly what he was told to do.
It completely looks like that. And you know what I'm wondering, too, Joe, is if that turns out to be the case, what do we do about that? Is that an impeachable offense by the president, or we just slap them on the
honestly,
wrist?
I mean, when do you start calling things treasonous? I mean, he's not supposed to be doing stuff like that. He is our president, not the Russian president.
Yeah. I'm going to pick up more lines, but I think that is the road that this thing is going to go down, Joe. And it'll be very interesting to see if what you say is true.
Yeah, I'm curious because it shouldn't be happening.
Thanks for the phone call, my friend.
Thanks, John.
Yep,
stay
well. Let's go from you to line two. Hey, Linda, you're on the air.
Well, I'm close to what Joe said, but I think that Flynn's going to take the fall for it. It's not that he's going to be like, the president told me to do it. He's taking the fall for it. That's why the president is saying he should ask for immunity. He should be getting immunity.
He's a good soldier, that sort of thing.
That sort of thing, yes.
How about that? Thanks for the call from you to line three, and that's Michael. You're on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Yes, I don't think that General Flynn necessarily has anything to hide, and that's why he's declaring that he wants immunity. I think it's a very smart thing to do, given today's politically charged environment. A good example of this is what happened to Ollie North when he testified before Congress, and he was crucified for some totally unrelated issue for what he went up there for, and he was unjustly prosecuted. And any lawyer worth his weight in gold would tell anybody in today's environment going before Congress to do exactly that.
Yeah, I understand the insulation you want, but suppose what you are about to testify about, what you're going to say is okay. It's not a crime on your part, and it does not allude to a crime by the president or anybody else. You're going to, for instance, if Flynn wants to say that when I met with the Russian ambassador, we talked about, the death of some diplomat, and I expressed our condolences, and then we talked about Syria and how our nations have to come together and resolve that, and I wished him well and he wished me well. If he had that kind of a conversation, why would he need immunity?
I'll tell you why. Because you have people that are congressional representatives that will not leave it to that. They will go after a whole realm of different things to discredit him and create some kind of criminal liability. If he got the questions in advance and they said, here's what we're going to ask you, and it was that tone in nature, I would agree with you. But you want to guarantee that some congressman isn't going to play nasty baseball and throw things at him that would be considered inappropriate and not even necessarily concerning the topic at hand.
Michael, I appreciate your phone call. I'm listening to you. That's interesting. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Admiral Flynn, do you like kittens? No. Perjury. Then they got him. See, something like that.
He's a lieutenant general. He can take it. You know, if they all want to grant, look at what Neil Gorsuch went through when Dick Durbin read him the Riot Act, and then Senator Franken tried to make a mockery out of him. He seemed to manage that. This guy's a war hero. I think he can take some lobs from some silly Congress people. Here is Michael Flynn's immunity request rejected by Senate Intelligence Community. So I guess this just moved a little while ago. Steve, is this the same story you're doing? The Senate Intelligence Committee has turned down a request by Michael Flynn's lawyer for a grant of immunity. So the Senate's not going to give it to him. I wonder what the Playboy talk about a chess match there, huh? This is Jeff. You're on WGN. Jeff, what did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, King John.
Hey.
You know, my feeling was when you were reading Flynn's lawyer's statement,
yeah,
was it was a setup for a potential book deal. And it makes it more sensational, and it kind of makes him out to be a spy, and, you know, those books will be flying off the shelf.
Boy, that does sound like the opening line or a book pitch, doesn't it? General Flynn
right.
certainly has a story to tell, and
exactly.
he very much wants to tell it. Oh, I'm opening that book. Are you kidding me?
Right.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, right. thanks for the phone call.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Should the circumstances permit is the end of that sentence. And the circumstances are that he wants immunity, and evidently he is not going to get it on the Senate side. But here's what happens then. If he does not get immunity and they force him to testify, he'll sit there and take the Fifth Amendment over and over again. Lois Lerner was an IRS deputy commissioner. She wasn't the head of the IRS, but she was the person in charge of making sure that people that say they have tax-exempt status, in fact, do. And in the early 2010s, a lot of these right-wing organizations were popping up that were with tax-exempt status, and the Obama administration, help me on this, Steve.
I don't want to.
The Obama administration and the IRS said, well, let's look into them to make sure that they have tax-exempt status.
Well, here's there are very specific requirements to be tax-exempt. And the fact is that there are now many political organizations that feign to meet those requirements and then get by tax-free on both sides of the aisle. Get by tax-free, and then work politically.
The IRS was targeting the ones that were on the right.
I'm not sure of that, but there were, the ones on the right were the ones that complained, and they may well have been, John. And I don't know how – the question was how orchestrated it was, right?
Okay, so then when she was called to testify without immunity, all she did was take the Fifth. All she did was take the Fifth.
Right.
She would not talk about whether or not the administration had asked the IRS or if the IRS itself was specifically targeting right-wing organizations. And a lot of people said it sure sounds like a duck. It quacks like a duck. So what's the story here, lady? You're here to testify. She only took the Fifth. It was maddening. There it is. 238 WGN. This is John Williams. You know the story about Jay Cutler's bum earlier this week?
Yes.
So I thought we'd end up talking about it, so I went online and printed out a copy of the story. And the copy I printed has the uncensored vision of his nude body standing there looking out over the beach.
Yeah.
I suppose a lot of people have that. It's no big deal. It's just, you know, a really awesome physique from behind, got no clothes on, looking out at the ocean. And his wife thought it would be awesome and everybody would like them even more if she shared that on Instagram. So she did. Anyway, I had that on my desk. Then I was talking to some HR people about my insurance and paycheck and stuff like that here.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were saying, okay, call this number and then here's some stuff and here's some options. So I'm taking all these website and phone numbers down. I'm scratching it on a piece of paper.
Which piece of paper was that, John?
So now I'm carrying around this thing of Jay Cutler's rear end all the time because nice. I keep meaning to follow up on the insurance options that we have here. And
you just held it up to the webcam, too, which is...
Oh, hi, webcam. There. Are you watching us at WGNradio.com? There's me. But that's why I'm doing
no
it.
No one's looking at you.
That's why I'm doing it. That is why I am doing that. This is an interesting story. It's in Springfield, Illinois. Joe Thomas received national attention this week after a photo of him at work at the IHOP in Springfield was posted on that company's Facebook page. He was pictured as he helped a disabled woman eat her meal. Springfield resident Keisha Dotson posted the picture, hoping that the company would recognize his kindness. Quote, I have worked in the retail and service industry in the past, she said, and I know that people usually only contact corporate with negative feedback, so I wanted to share some positive news, she said. The disabled woman and her husband have been regulars at the IHOP for years. Quote, I always see him stop eating to feed her, he said. And I was like, heck, if I'm not doing anything, why don't I go feed her so he can eat and everyone can be happy? And so there's the picture of him feeding this woman he does not know as a consideration to a man he does not know so that they can both enjoy their meal together. Once in a while, you see random acts of kindness like that. And once in a while, they go viral and they always should. And that guy's name is Joe Thomas, and he's on a phone line. Hey, Joe, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I'm fine, are you?
Thanks for doing what you did there, Joe.
Oh, that was nothing. That's something that everybody should be able to do, or at least once in their life, at least.
On behalf of humanity, thank you for doing what you did there, Joe.
There's no problem.
Were you on the clock at that time then? I mean, what was your job at the store at that time, at the restaurant?
Yes, I was on the clock. I was actually serving. Yep, I was right in the middle of serving.
So serving meaning you're a waiter there?
Yes.
And so did you have other tables? I mean, how were you able to manage both tasks?
Oh, that was easy because I just went around and made sure all my other tables was taken care of to where when I did have a chance to actually sit down, I wouldn't have to worry about getting up and have to deal with any other tables.
Yeah, no kidding. So how long have you been working at that restaurant?
I've been working at this restaurant for like 11 and a half years.
So you like that job, do you?
Yeah, I like it.
And you must know these people then because they're regulars and you've been there for a while, right?
Yeah, they come in like basically every Saturday around 10 o'clock in the morning.
I see. And is that a shift you usually work then?
Yes, sir.
And so do you know them by name? Do they know you to say, hey, Joe, how's it going?
Yes.
I see. So maybe it wasn't too awkward for them to have you sitting down and doing something very intimate, feeding that woman, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that's something I do like all the time.
What do you mean?
Ever since they've been coming in and went to where when her disease got to the point to where she couldn't really function by herself, that's when I actually started sitting down and helping him out by feeding her.
I see. So while we are discovering this for the first time, this is something you've been doing for a while, huh?
Yes.
No kidding. How long have you been doing that?
Oh, I couldn't even begin to tell you how long it's been. I know maybe sure, months, probably.
Months?
I'm not for sure. It's been about maybe, I know it's been a couple years or more.
Yeah, wow. So what's happened since that went viral, since the world found out about that?
Oh, I've been getting so many different calls and compliments and congratulations and thanks, and I wish it was more people like that out in the world like that. It's just all kind of gratitude and gratification, all kind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in a way, what you did was very simple, and it's a gesture that maybe a lot of us would or should do, but maybe we wouldn't. But it's almost a sad commentary, isn't it, Joe, that simple act of kindness is now being seen as something extraordinary.
Right. Right. That I mean, I really didn't figure that it would do all this and go this viral so fast. I mean, I figured when the picture was taken, maybe that Monday all this would be over with. That's the thought I had.
It's just getting started, man. So so like what's the farthest away that somebody's reached out to you or have people offered you money or another job or anything like that?
I have one that mentioned a job, but I don't know about that one. And I had a couple people to call to say they'll be sending stuff to the store for me. And I mean, it's like I said, it's not nothing really major to me. But,
you know, if I go to the IHOP in Springfield, I'm definitely asking for your table.
Oh, I'd had a lot of that, too. I'd had a lot of that.
And I'm going to leave you. Have the tips picked up a little bit since then, Joe?
Well, a little bit. Now, I mean, they're still basically around the same, but it has, I guess, maybe about $30, $40 more.
Yeah, well, I think you deserve every one of them, and I know that's not why you did it. All right, well, are you at the store right now? Are you at the restaurant right now?
Yes.
I'll let you go, Joe Thomas. Thank you for doing what you did there, my friend.
All right, you're welcome. You guys have a beautiful day.
His name is Joe Thomas. He works at the IHOP in Springfield, and he did something that I hope we would all do, but we don't, do we? It's 2:45. Hey, we're going to play our Numbers in the News current events quiz. Numbers in the News. Look, you listen to WGN Radio. You're a smart person. I've got 10 questions here. I want you to see if you can run the table. I've got a great prize if you get all 10 of them right. Call me now. Somebody gets to play Numbers in the News. The number's 312-981-7200. Now it's time to play Numbers in the
Numbers.
News.
Numbers in the News. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's time to play with numbers.
And there is no prize. Yeah.
Okay, Justin in Lake Villa is going to be our player today. Hey, Justin, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN. How are you?
John, I'm doing well. So glad to hear you back on the air here in Chicago.
Yeah, what a nice thing of you to say. Where are you from? What are you doing this afternoon?
I'm in Lake Villa. I'm in sales, and I sell commercial printing, and I'm just out and about visiting some clients. So I pulled over and in a parking lot here and gave you a call.
I got 10 questions for you. If you get them all right, we'll invite you back as our reigning champion. You ready?
Sounds great.
I'll let you reach out to Steve Bertrand not once but twice. He will be your lifeline.
Okay.
Question number one. Pedestrian fatalities are, according to an article in the Sun-Times today by Neil Steinberg, going up 25% or down 25%? Are more people getting hit by cars or less? Up 25% or pedestrian fatalities are going down 25%?
I would think they're going down with some of the safety implements. Oh, right off the bat?
Yeah. You should have. Now remember, don't hit the buzzer too soon, Elif, because sometimes they want to reach out to Steve Bertrand for an assist, but you're 0 for 1. You know what it is?
I know, I should too. Steve's a smart guy.
Oh, yeah, he's super smart.
I'm super smart. I was going to say down, too.
Well, you know what it is.
That makes me feel a little better.
It's not only they say the drivers are looking at their smartphones and running over people, but the pedestrians are walking in front of the drivers looking at their smartphones. Mm. People are walking right into the traffic. What percentage of married couples sleep in separate bedrooms? Is it 8% or 25%?
You know what? I thought I was right on that first one. I wasn't, so I'm going to deflect to Steve here. What's your thought?
Well, I had to listen to the show earlier, so I'll say 25%.
Had to listen to the show
earlier?
I
was listening earlier.
The opportunity was privileged to listen to the show earlier.
25%.
He says 25%.
25 it is.
Correctamundo. Boy, that's weird. 1 in 4 couples are not sleeping in the same bedroom?
You're not.
No, now that you mention it, I'm not. But when Brenda does move down, I'm almost sure she'll stay in the same room as me.
Then you have to answer the survey question again.
What is the most commonly used password? Number one, most commonly used password is password or 123456?
I'm going to say it's password.
Mm. Password is wrong.
Oh, my gosh.
You obviously are out of the car and with clients a lot during the day.
Yeah, I am.
How much money has been tipped so far to Lyft drivers? Different than Uber, Lyft drivers get tipped. Have they collectively received $900,000 or $200 million in tips?
I'm gonna go with Steve as a lifeline on this one again.
You coward! You coward!
Well, I'm going to say $2
million. 200 million.
200 million? I'm going to say...
The other answer is 900,000.
900,000, wow.
So just under a million or 200 million in Lyft tips so far.
900,000.
He says 900,000.
We're going with it.
Go with 900,000. That's wrong. $200 million tipped to Lyft drivers already.
Wow.
The news
I'm
anchor...
The,
no kidding. Me too. The news anchor recently determined by a national survey to be the most huggable. Most huggable is A, Bill O'Reilly, or B, Anderson Cooper.
Who did they ask?
Millions and millions of Americans. In fact, every one. It was a door-to-door survey. It cost the government $18 billion. And they said, who is the most huggable news anchor, Anderson Cooper or Bill O'Reilly?
Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper is correct. Welcome back to the win column. By the way,
right.
Bill O'Reilly was number 4 on the list. I don't know that Maxine Waters was asked, but Bill O'Reilly was number 4 on that list.
I'm surprised.
That is a little shocking.
Where was John Williams on the list?
He did not make the list. They did not include lovable talk show hosts.
Oh, they could have.
How about this one? The Department of Homeland Security estimates that the cost for building a border wall will be $21 billion or $163
billion? $163 billion sounds insane, but that sounds about right for government spending. Oh, my God.
How about this one? What's the most American-made car, the Chevy Traverse or the Toyota Camry? Most American-made car.
I do believe, even though this sounds wrong, that it's Toyota Camry.
Okay, I want you to take your first reaction for the next question.
And throw it away.
Oh, I wouldn't be doing any better, let me tell you.
Okay.
That was tricky because Camrys are very American cars, but the Chevy Traverse is the most American. More advertising dollars are spent online or more advertising dollars are spent on TV?
I'm going to say on TV because it's more expensive to advertise on TV than online. Oh, my goodness. You can just hang up on me now.
What you're doing is very difficult. It's statistically just as hard to get them all wrong as it is to get them all right. So, if you want to play that game, if you get them all wrong, we should give you a prize.
So maybe try to get this next one wrong.
Now it's a double reverse psychology. How many games did the Cubs win last year? 103 or 115?
I should know this. 115.
I got bad news for you. You got it right.
Oh, darn it.
And finally, a group advocating the legalization of pot in Illinois says that if we legalize pot, that would generate how much money for the state? A, $28 million, or B, $350 million?
I've known a lot of potheads in my day. I'm going to say $350 million.
He says $350, and finally, the pot pays off. $350, despite the buzzer, is correct.
Sorry about that, Justin.
Yeah, Elif was so used to buzzing you, she gave you the buzzer.
I should have used a fake name for this. This is embarrassing.
We love you, Justin. Thank you for calling. Thank you for playing our numbers in the news current events quiz.
Thanks, John. You're really great. It really is cool to have you on the air again.
It's fun to have listeners like you, sir, win or lose. Okay, just a little after 3 o'clock, Ro and Anna are in the studio getting ready to do their thing.
Yes, we are. We have got Mike Monaco is going to join us, our legal analyst, to talk about the immunity situation with Michael Flynn. What does that actually really mean? I mean, you can watch all the cable newsers spin their versions of it, but what does it really mean for Michael Flynn, and what does it really mean for Michael Monaco? That's always the most important thing.
Is he representing him? That means a lot.
Yeah. In this case, and not yet. Generally, we find out about an hour later. Oh, yeah, no, he called me.
Right. So, and he does have a lot of high-profile clients.
Yeah,
so
that's true. Susan Schmidt will be here to talk about the week. This is the end of the first quarter, right? This is the last day of the first quarter of 2017.
Wow.
Think about that.
Also means I got to get my taxes done pretty soon.
Exactly.
Yes, that is correct. Adam Kinzinger is going to be here. He wrote an op-ed in the New York Times today about what's happened to his beloved Republican Party.
And he referenced Snoopy and Lucy.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. He did.
No kidding, really.
There was an analogy in there.
Well, I can't imagine. I don't know how that goes.
Something about the way she pulls the football.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Again and again, and Charlie Brown falls for it.
Yeah, So that's the quote. That's the pullout quote all the cable news operations are using. So
no kidding, really. Is that the Russian salad dressing of the end of the week?
Yes, it is.
It's the note we end on.
All right. Have a good weekend, John. Thank you very much.